The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. Telling it as it is. This is the Dean Mackin Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
As we get you home into the weekend across Australia, as we get you off to work over in the UK, or as we keep you up late in the US, and welcome to those on the online chat. We've got Shoe, C-H-O-U-E-T-T. I probably pronounced that wrong. I've got Abby. Good morning, Abby, and a whole bunch. I feel like the woman from, we had a show in Australia called Romper Room with a woman's magic mirror. I feel a little bit like that. And for those listening in the UK, you're going to be immensely interested a bit later this hour, because we've got Ian McRae, one of my regulars, who was the biggest name in Sydney radio and probably in Australia back in the 70s. And we inherited him, thank goodness, from the pirate radio stations off the coast of the UK. And he's going to tell us about those days, about the boat that rocked, the real story. We've got half an hour with him, and we're going to open up the lines later on while he's on. And for those of you who would like to ask him a question, I mean, he was the guy playing the Beatles when you were not allowed. The BBC would only play pop for 1 hour a week. He was one of those guys who literally was threatened by the government, who could have faced incarceration, massive fines for playing the music that shaped the nation. And he was doing it illegally, but proudly, off the coast, but in international waters. So I doubt that was illegal, if I'm honest. And there he was. He's going to tell us about those days and a perspective that you will rarely get from anyone. And you can ask those questions later on. And we'll open up the lines in about 5 minutes as well. So if you'd like to call 1-800-670-310 in Australia or the UK, 033-0024-1026. And if you're in the US, I'd give you the number. But, you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. How much sense could you make at 3 o'clock in the morning? So if you want to call, the guy with the pretty voice will let you know in due course after the next break. Ben Robert Smith, and for those of you who don't know internationally, he is an Australian war hero. And the media in Australia, three publications, in fact, made some pretty substantial claims defaming him, calling him a murderer, amongst other things, despite the fact that he has still not been proven or charged criminally. And yet they got away with it. He had a defamation case yesterday, and we were waiting for the result. I wasn't surprised that the court, I know how courts work these days. And but here are people now outwardly calling him a murderer, despite the fact that, again, he has not been proved or even charged criminally guilty. I still think of him as a hero. And until such time as he is proven guilty, I shall continue to think so. But for those of you who are still having a crack at him, I just think that Ben Robert Smith is a hero. And until you can prove otherwise, you may well be facing defamation charges. Don't think he can only do that once. I know there may be somewhat of a precedent. You could argue that. But I would argue that if you say something slightly different, it's a different scenario. I don't know. I'm not a legal mind, but I would assume that common sense has something to do with it. I'm going to play this thing. I don't know. See, you won't get this over in the UK. We get it here. I was born here. Okay, yeah, my dad's from Scotland. Yeah, but I was born here. I am indigenous to Australia. I am indigenous to Australia. And when you go to a major sporting event in Australia, you've got to sit there. You have to sit there and be welcomed to your own country by those who consider themselves by race to be indigenous, when that is not what the word indigenous means. It means that you were born here. So maybe those people who believe they are more indigenous than others may need to get a dictionary, I think. But this is the kind of crap that you've got to deal with. And many people stand for it because they say, will you stand for the welcome to country and the national anthem? People hear national anthem and they stand. I don't. I stay seated and I wait until I hear the national anthem. Then my son and I stand. This is what we hear every time we go to the footy.
I am, and we are, the first voice from the first people of the first day. Today, we're not about pushing your people apart, we're about the union. Of us all, in this great game, in this great country, we need to have the conversations leading up to the end of this year. And I think we're mature enough to make the right call, yeah?
Now, that may have sounded like a resounding lot of applause, but it was a small percentage of a 80,000-strong crowd. And I'll tell you what, we are mature enough to make the right decision, and it will be a resounding no, because they wish to rewrite our constitution. They wish to have those in the Labor Party here that we cannot trust, and the Greens, those who, and they're saying they want to give a voice to Indigenous people of Australia. I'm explaining this, Australians, to those listening internationally so that they get what's happening here. And they want to divide this country by race. They want to say that the Aboriginal people here do not have a voice. They are absolutely, they have a voice. Some of our best politicians are Aboriginal. Jacinta Price, Warren Mundina, a couple of names that come to mind. They are disproportionately overrepresented in Parliament. They are over 3% in Parliament, but as a race are less than 3%. And I don't even like saying by race, because they have absolutely every right that every other person who was born into or has Australian citizenship, they have every right the same as all of us. But here they are. They want this Indigenous voice to Parliament, and they will be able to override pretty much any decision, any law moving forward. And all the things that we don't know are going to be in this absolutely just disgraceful attack on our sovereignty is going to be the things that we will pay for forever and all time. It will be irreversible. It will be set in stone. They've already said that they'll legislate it regardless. Let them bloody well legislate it. That way you'll get a taste, and that way you'll know what you avoided, and then you can just vote them out. But if this gets written into our constitution, we're buggered. We are absolutely buggered, and it's not the Indigenous people behind this. It's not them. It is the invisible global elite who want access to our constitution, who want to destroy this country and do things to it that they can't presently do because of the constitution. Don't let them do it. Vote no. And if you're an Aussie expat over in the UK or the US, do a postal vote and you can vote no as well. Did you know that if you have a suggestion for a possible guest that you'd like to hear on TNT Radio, or perhaps you even have a topic that you feel we should discuss, then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website and help us make a difference here on TNT Radio.
Getting straight to the facts.
Enough with the lies. We need facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yeah, trial by media. They can call people murderers now, even though they have not been criminally charged or found guilty. But of course, if you do that and you have a defamation case against you and are found to be vindicated in making such charges, I guess you can just keep on going. That's not the Australia that I grew up in. I didn't think that's how it worked. Ben Roberts, he's resigned from the Seven Network after he lost his defamation case against the Nine newspapers yesterday. TNT's own Jeremy Beck has details on the story.
Yes, Dean. Ben Robert Smith had been general manager of Seven Queensland since 2015. His failed court case was bankrolled by his company's owner, Kerry Stokes. Seven's managing director and CEO, James Warburton, informed staff that Robert Smith offered his resignation. He says, as you're all aware, the judgment in the defamation case was handed down yesterday. Ben has been on leave whilst the case was running and today has offered his resignation, which we have accepted. We thank Ben for his commitment to Seven and wish him all the best. Now, this is a fall from grace for Ben Robert Smith, who was awarded a medal for gallantry in 2006, the Victoria Cross for Australia in 2011, and a commendation for distinguished service in 2012. Federal Court Judge Anthony Bisanko dismissed Robert Smith's defamation case, ruling that it was proven based on the balance of probabilities, that's an important point there, that Robert Smith murdered three Afghan men and criminally violated rules of military engagement. This is a civil case, though, as you mentioned before, and Robert Smith currently remains a free man, as this trial was about defamation, not war crimes. So not good news there for Robert Smith, Dean.
It's not, mate. Again, trial by media. He put up his medals as collateral, $25 million plus in legal fees. The judge will be back soon to figure out who's got to pay who and how much. But I would strongly suggest that an appeal is very likely. What do you think the future holds for Ben Roberts Smith?
I don't think it's looking too good, Dean, because there certainly is a bit of a lynch mob out to get him. You have already calls by various people to pursue criminal action so that he potentially could be facing some trial through the Office of the Special Investigator, which was created in 2021. And this is the first dedicated war crimes prosecution investigator in Australia. So there certainly will be political pressure for it to pursue criminal prosecution for alleged murders and war crimes. So I wouldn't like to be in his shoes. And as we said before, at the moment, it's just a civil case. It's just about beyond reasonable doubt compared with balance of probabilities compared with the actual criminal prosecution would have to be beyond reasonable doubt. So not looking good for him, I would suggest. I would not like to be in his shoes.
No, if he was to be charged, I'd love it to be amongst a jury of his peers. That I would very much like to see. I would almost suggest he has to appeal, because if he doesn't, there may be the appearance of guilt there. And of course, if he was to win that appeal, there may in fact be no criminal charges down the track. At this point, I would suggest there will be a very strong push for that. Kerry Stokes, how upset do you expect Kerry to be?
Oh, certainly he won't be happy at all. It's a big blow. An enormous blow for him and all involved, because they've put up a lot of money for this. So it's a big deal. I think there will be a lot of unhappy people, particularly in Australia's Defence Force as well.
Yeah. Well, what really worries me in particular is that, and again, I mean, I wasn't there. I don't know. I've never fought in the war. I'm guessing we've got plenty of people listening who have. And for those of us who haven't, we cannot judge how people acted and the feel of what it feels like to be in a combat zone. And I just hope that these prosecutions, these witch hunts that we're having at the moment with our military, don't lead to somebody having to make a wrong decision that sees somebody's son or daughter killed in combat. I hope that is not the case, but very much we appreciate our TNT's very own Jeremy Beck. He'll join us again Monday at 10 minutes past the hour when I start my program, as he always does, and I hope he has a terrific week. And we're going to be back after the break with a bit of talk back. So if you're listening over in the UK, you can call us on 033-0024-1026, or in Australia, 1-800-670-310. We'll open the lines now. You're listening to TNT Radio.
You should hear what Timothy Shea is talking about.
Most people haven't even been involved in politics before. Or if they did, you know, we used to say that political campaigns didn't heat up until after Labor Day. No, not Labor Day the year before the election. Labor Day the couple months before the election. Politics was never on people's radar like it is now. And the left took advantage of that. So while most Americans were busy keeping their heads down, doing a good job at work, doing a good job bringing up their children, paying their taxes, getting their 2 weeks vacation to go out to the lake or wherever, up to the mountains or wherever it is they go to the beach, the left, for over 100 years now, has been incrementally pushing this, doesn't matter what you call it, socialist, fascist, communist, totalitarian, dictatorial, it's all the same thing. It's all about control. It doesn't matter what label you put on it. It's a bunch of whiners, a bunch of losers, that the only thing they can build is the tearing down of things. The only thing they can achieve is the tearing down of a culture that took millennia to build. It's unbelievable, and yet here we are.
The Reckoning with Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Our lines are now open. Call Dean Mackin now. From the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-2-3-NEWS.
201-6425. From the UK, call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And welcome back to the program. We're going to open the lines and get to our calls real soon. We've got an email here, this one from Mark. My father had influence in the Maritime Union of Australia back when the unions were there for the members. Yeah, I remember those days. Unions are good when you have hard asses working for them like my dad. Yeah, mate, the good old days of the labour unions. I had to host an event. I didn't realise it was for one of them. I probably would have declined. Having said that, I did charge them double. And all I heard was them referring to each other as comrade. Comrade this, comrade that. I had to take a Stemitil tablet just so I wasn't sick. We'll open the lines in just 2 seconds. But before that, if you're listening anywhere, you can love who we talk to in about 15 minutes' time. Ian McRae, the boat that rocked. He was one of the guys in the 60s at the pirate radio stations off the coast of England. He's one of my regular contributors, one of the biggest names on radio here in Australia. And we'll find out about that. So whether you're 8 or 108, that is going to be of interest to you, I absolutely promise. We're going to go to the lines, and we've got, I do believe, if I can turn my head that far, Julie. We've got Julie up in the Blue Mountains. Hey, Julie, how are you?
Hi, Dean. I just wanted to tell you about, I rang the federal government yesterday, and it's This is about the voice, and it's based on, you know, the voice is based on the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples.
Sounds about right, yes.
And the federal government are looking at implementing that already before we've had a, you know, the referendum. And Even though, like, it's only a declaration, it's not a treaty, it's not legally binding, and it's only a statement. And I found out from the Joint Standing Committee for the Aboriginal Affairs that they're looking at applying it, and they're having an inquiry into it. And how to get out of it, you just have to say no or yes. That's how you do it. Anyway, what happened in 2007, John Howard said no because it would elevate us out of our domestic law and would be into international law. And then Kevin Rudd in 2009 said yes on the sorry day. And now in 2017, United Nations is forcing countries to actually comply with and put it into the legislation, and this is contrary to our constitution, and I can't believe they're still doing it, and it's not legally binding, but this is just a little bit of a flavour of what it is. Article 3 talks about self-determination, which we know is to create an independent nation and freely determine their political status, freely pursue their economic, social, cultural development, and this is the worst one, Article 19, that the states have to consult and cooperate with Indigenous peoples through their representatives before they do anything in government. Now, do you believe that someone could put this into legislation?
No, I don't believe, and I'd like to think that or believe that Australians aren't stupid enough to fall for it when it comes time to vote yes or no.
Well, I read some of the few senators that we have that are doing a good job today, and they didn't know anything about it. But and what they're doing is, that, like, if you go through and you have a look, Article 13 is Indigenous people's rights to enforcement of treaties, agreements, contracts, and they've also, Article 11 is the right to their cultural practices, and we all know what their cultural practices are. They're not good cultural practices, and they're actually forbidding them from assimilation. So they're taking them right back, and what it's going to do, once it's in our legislation, we are launched into international law. And also, I also found out that an Aboriginal lawyer was sacked from the Prime Minister's Advisory Indigenous Council because she exposed the plot for the United Nations to steal our land. And she's been very vocal. And she said it as Agenda 2030, the United Nations elite will probably, they believe that they'll have 80% of Australia. And this is why people really need to start to wake up. And the Prime Minister is now calling everybody voice deniers, chicken little. And he said, just like the 1967 referendum, nothing happened. It's sky didn't fall in. Yeah, but what happened? They advanced the international communist strategy. the globalist new world order to overthrow constitutional monarchies and democracies, especially in Australia, to make us a republic, using Joseph Stalin in the 1920s theory to use the indigenous peoples to overthrow governments and impose socialism. And people don't realise they achieved quite a bit. They've created two nations in our country. We've got a $40 billion industry, Aboriginal industry, that goes to the elites. They've destroyed our Christian colonised heritage. We've got an Aboriginal land trust that owns 50% of our land. No one knows who owns it. They've psychologically abused us and our children in schools, saying that we killed the Aborigines and we should be sorry for it. They've abolished assimilation. When I grew up, this was the policy, and the Aborigines thrived. They weren't a problem. They've taken the Aborigines back 200 years ago to be tribal, and this is what their problem is. And they took in the 1970s, they took the police and the missionaries away to allow them alcohol, no jobs, and no services, and have created the problem. And they've funded the sovereign. You know, have you heard of the sovereign movement?
No, I haven't. No.
Well, they stand up to police. They drive without licences and they say...
Oh, yeah.
The other thing that they've also done is we've had the Mabo case, and this has all come about from the 67 referendum. Nobody was told that this would be what would happen. And they've invented the test for Aboriginality. And then we've got all these other treaties like the ICCPR, the CERD, you know, elimination of racial discrimination. And we've got the Uluru Hope. There's books written about who actually owns that. Uluru was abandoned for 50 years and they were told that they couldn't claim that. And what happened, it's a really good book, everybody should read it, the Uluru Hope. And what happened is Bob Hawke set up a company, and this needs to be investigated, and this is, we have the Uluru now, people. And this is why the referendum should be stopped, because there's no evidence for it, and it's like the Voice, and this is why we've got the Voice, it's because of the 1967 referendum. And it's the biggest fraud in history to be perpetrated against Australians for the United Nations elite to take our country. And do you remember,
Julie, I'm running out of time because I do have another caller that I need to get to. But again, you can call us back next week and finish that off. But I absolutely appreciate what you're saying. You are 1,000% correct. And for those of you listening internationally who don't know what Uluru is, that big red rock that you see out in the Australian outback, the Indigenous people are now saying that you cannot go up that rock. You cannot climb that rock unless you are Indigenous. Imagine being Indigenous to the UK and telling people that they couldn't come and have a look at Stonehenge close enough because they were not of the same racial group. It is racist. It is BS. And for those who want to go watch a big red rock and climb up it, go to Western Australia. It's called Mount Augustus. It's bigger. It's better. And anyone can go up it. That's what you do. Vote no, and I think we'll go okay. But at least if we say no, and it's a resounding no, they won't ask again for a while anyway. But they'll implement it through legislation. But we can repeal that by simply voting smarter in the future. Not that we've done that any time recently. Mark the Courier, we've got him on the line. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Good, Dean. How are you, mate?
Mate, I'm doing excellent. Certainly better than the people of Sydney that you are feeding all the time, all the homeless people that you're wandering around. I shouldn't say that, actually. I should reword that because you found so many of them jobs. It's just unfortunate we have so many people on the streets of Sydney, and not just Sydney, but Melbourne, Brisbane, people on the streets of London too, I would imagine, and all over the America. America's probably the worst of the three, and it's just going to get worse.
It is, mate. It's going to get worse. And come next, I think it's next Tuesday when the interest rates go up again, and mark my words, they will go up again, that'll tip more people over the edge and put more people homeless.
Mark, can you believe that in recent months, the house prices, despite falling a significant amount last year, have been on the rise for several months in a row? I would suggest that this is going to, as we get one, two, probably three more interest rate rises, those who are literally just hanging on by the edge of their fingernails are going to have to sell those properties, and it's just going to end up in tears and mass, the houses are just going to plummet massively.
They are, and you're going to have more people living in their cars and caravans and camper vans and wherever else they can, wherever else I can live.
And, mate, to say nothing of the 1.5 million people that they want to bring out here in the next, I think, 5 years. And, again, for those listening in the UK or the US thinking 1.5 million, that's nothing, well, you're probably right. And if you think about us in terms of our geographic landscape, yeah, we're a huge country, but we've basically only got people living on the edges, if we're honest, and our population is merely 26 million. So if you bring in 1.5 million when we have no houses, literally no spare housing at the moment, a woman living in the inner city sharing a flat, it could be paying up to $1,200 a week just to live in a pretty small two-bedroom unit. It's gone mad.
It's gone mad, mate. You've got something like, I think they said the other day, 33,000 Airbnbs. I mean, why can't they just make a rule where Airbnb's gone out of the country and those houses get returned to the rental market?
Yeah, it'd be nice. See, I don't mind people who are Australians who have worked hard owning a couple of properties and doing that, but I certainly 1,000% are against anybody from overseas being able to do it, but especially countries like China where we cannot buy land in China. So why would we reciprocate and allow them to do that here?
That's exactly right. So a lot of them, those Chinese investors, they'll buy the house and leave them empty. And that's what they do. They leave them empty.
Yeah, and there should be a tax, an empty house tax, and there should be inspectors who go around, only for foreign-owned properties, certainly not for those in Australia who wish to do that. I thought it was funny, there was an Airbnb owned by Pork Barilaro, sorry, John Barilaro, and he jokes about this, by the way. There is the audio evidence of him having a joke about that name himself, so he's obviously not too offended by it. He owned an Airbnb, and social media commentator Friendly Geordies, not only did he go and stay in his house and do a video in there, he apparently took a dump in a couple of places and had sex on all the beds. So I thought that was rather funny.
Well, that's it. It's things you do with that, yeah.
Absolutely. And for those overseas who don't know who John Barilaro is, he's a disgraced, I would say disgraced, former politician. Yeah, mate, I think he's disgraceful anyway. Mark, always appreciate your call and hope to catch up with you. I saw you out socially somewhere, we won't say where, not that long ago, mate, and I hope you can do that again imminently.
I'm working on it, mate, and we'll see how we go.
Good on you, my friend. You take care. And, okay, I'm really excited. We're going to talk to Ian McRae after the break. And again, The Boat That Rocked. If you've seen the movie, you didn't hear anything. You haven't spoke to one of the guys who did it, who lived it. And we're going to talk to him at length about it after the break, only here on TNT Radio.
Now.
I've got news for you.
Give me the news.
Give it to me.
Give me the news.
TNT Radio News.
News flash.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. Australia's most decorated living soldier has been exposed in court as a murderer and a liar after losing an historic defamation case brought against three of the nation's leading newspapers that had accused him of war crimes. The Pentagon has announced it'll cough up the cash that Ukraine needs to cover the cost of Elon Musk's satellite internet services, and it's been revealed the environmental impact from beef that's grown in labs trumps the carbon footprint of traditionally raised meat.
Are you sitting comfortably?
Oh, yes, yes.
Then I'll begin.
Even when you're just sitting around, we're rocking the talk.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'm excited, and I hope you are too. Especially, I would guess, for those waiting for Katie to come in, and so am I. I'm off to another job that I do that I really enjoy. Not as much as this, but I very much enjoy it straight after this, and I'll be listening to Katie, as you will, on the way there. Our next guest, one of the biggest names in Australian radio ever, the king, my king of Australian radio, Ian McRae. He had the good fortune, I assume it's good fortune, we'll find out how good it was, imminently, to play you the songs that the BBC denied you back in the 60s. If it was cool, it wasn't legal. It had to happen on A Boat That Rocked. And if you don't know what that is, or if you have watched the movie, perhaps this will give you an idea.
In 1966, there were 571 American radio stations blasting rock and roll 24 hours a day. But in the country that gave you the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, the only way to hear the music was to tune in to a boat.
You're listening to Radio Rock and I'm the Count. And I'm counting on you as we count down to ecstasy.
They were called pirates.
Pirate radio.
They are
sewer of dirty, low morals.
Could I introduce Carl?
Hi, I'm Angus.
I'm the cow.
I'm a lesbian.
You know what a lesbian is?
I do.
Fun times, eh?
The fans made them famous.
Wow. You think you could ever love a man with a Fu Manchu?
No.
I could shave it.
The government made them outlaws.
The drug takers and the lawbreakers and the bottom-bashing agitators.
I will soon be the first person to curse on rock and roll radio.
But they risked it all.
You can't do this.
Why not? We're pirates. That's why we're sitting out here in the middle of the friggin' ocean.
For the music they love.
Goodbye!
We're going to shut them down.
They can't close us down.
They will find a way. Governments loathe people being free.
From midnight on New Year's Eve, Radio Rock will be breaking the law.
Tonight, pirate radio dies.
It's gonna happen.
They will come after us.
Let them try.
We thought we'd never die, but
you can't fight City Hall. 3, 2, 1.
Only kin dudes, let's rock!
The the man who rocked Sydney airwaves all through the 70s, 80s, and continues to do it today here on TNT Radio, my very special guest and regular contributor, Mr. Ian McRae. How are you, my friend?
What, still no fanfare?
No, I'm working on it. But, hey, you know, if you're going to blame anybody, blame the guy that ran the radio school I went to.
Oh, I think I know him.
I think you might. It was terrific, by the way. Thank you very much. Mate, I just can't wait. I've got a million questions to ask. And by the way, anyone who's on the online chat who wants to ask Ian a question or send an email, do it, because we're going to talk to Ian for about half an hour about this. So if you've got any questions, you can do that, and we'd love you to. Or even, in fact, I'll give out the UK number, 033-002-4106. If you want to call in, you can even ask Ian a question. I'm pretty sure we can do that. We can do anything here at TNT Radio. My first question, Ian McRae, are you ready?
I was ready.
Okay, the movie, The Boat That Rocked, how close to the life you lived was the movie?
It wasn't. It wasn't.
You're talking about a lack of fanfare.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Yeah, I guess it was okay as a movie. I mean, having lived through the real thing, I hated the movie. But it got an audience, but there were so many things wrong that they hadn't done the research, obviously, about the way things really were on the pirate ships. And what was in the movie, there's no connection. Like, for example, they had the guy that apparently, this is in the movie, owned the station. I think it was Bill Nye played that part.
Yeah.
And he was living on the ship and working out of the ship. In point of fact, in the real world, there was a building which was renamed Caroline House right in the centre of London in one of the really upmarket areas. And that was the head office, was all run from there. I still remember going to get my job there, and I waited in the foyer to speak to the head honcho and watch it. They had a sort of a circular stairs coming down, and all these little dolly birds with the then very trendy miniskirts on were coming up and down the stairs. And I couldn't wait to start work with that station.
Mate, how old were you when you went for that job?
Oh, about four. No, it was, I would have been probably about 24.
Yeah. And had you worked in radio previously to that?
Yes, I had. I'd started in Australia, obviously, and what happened in those were at 3AW in Melbourne, a station called 3AW, still there, doing very well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I started as office boy, picking up the mail and everything, and then I went on to work in the record library, which was huge in those days, you know, all the old vinyl. And then when a vacancy occurred, I became a panel operator, and then I was there for about 4 years all up. Got my first real on-air job in a fairly close to Melbourne town called Colac, sitting about, in terms of miles then, about 95 miles down the freeway. And that was where I really saw a story in one of the magazines about this new thing in the UK called pirate radio. So I said to a mate of mine, we were actually under a table at a party. And we're looking at the magazine, and I said, why don't we go? He was a plumber. He wasn't into radio at all, but he said, yeah, I'll get a job over there. We'll go. So I sold my VW Beetle and bought a ticket. And of course, in those days, flying was too expensive, really, for most people. And so I went on the ship, the Oriana. Both of us went there, and we just turned up without a job, but not much money in our pockets left. And it went from there. Actually, I was sharing a flat with these girls I'd met on the Oriana, and I was just sleeping on the couch before I found somewhere to live. And they had a transistor radio, which are all the new go. That was a transistor radio. It was pretty interesting in those days, something new, portable and everything. And one was hanging on the back of the toilet door. And I put it on when I was in there and just went up and down the dial to see what was going on. And I heard this station called Radio City. I thought, that sounds pretty professional. I didn't realize at the time it was actually a pirate station offshore. It sounded so onshore and so together. They had a couple of Australian jocks there, obviously, and they had a competition going. So I quickly wrote down the name, the address of the station, and I wrote to them and said, you got any jobs? And they wrote back and said, yes, come and talk to us. And that's how it all started.
That's amazing. I've got a on the online chat. I'll just read you this. This comes from Chris. He writes, I remember listening to Leap Up and Down and Wave Your Knickers in the Air by Saint Cecilia as a child with a shortwave radio under my bedclothes as a 10 or 11 year old in 1971 from Radio Caroline. I might have been younger. The song was banned by the BBC at the time and was a bit of a piss take on women's lib.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah, that was on Radio Caroline. Yeah. I should explain that there were a combination of stations. Some were on ships and some were on what were called forts. And those forts, if you imagine a three-story metal cabin with windows, a flat roof, and set on four big concrete legs, which were sitting on the sea bottom. They were built during the Second World War. They had big guns on the roof, and they were there to protect the shipping lanes into London from the Luftwaffe. And of course, after the war, the guns were taken away, and the forts were just abandoned. And they were an obvious place to put a radio station. You know, haven't got to worry about heavy seas or anything like that because you're steady on the sea bottom. Although I got to say that when big waves hit, the forts did vibrate a bit and move a little bit, but we got used to that. And there are about six of the forts all together, and they're linked by these catwalks across between fort to fort. So we had our transmitter was one of the towers, and the accommodation another tower, and the studios third tower. And they were all connected by these catwalks. So that was Radio City. And then after a bit of drama I can tell you about, that was closed down and I went to work for Radio Caroline, which was a bit more upmarket than the old forts on a ship.
Well, that was my next question. So you were actually on one of the boats. Now, we know they rocked as far as the content of what you were playing. Did the boats actually rock?
Well, there's been a lot of people. I often get questions, in fact, saying when you're in rough seas, which we often were, being in the North Sea, because then we were playing, of course, vinyl records on turntables. Oh, yeah. And a lot of people say, well, didn't the needle keep jumping out of the groove and when the seas were really big? And my answer was, no, I never heard of that happening there. It never happened to me or when I was on the ship. And I think the reason may have been that the ship was anchored at the bow, so we're always facing into the weather, so you're not getting that rocking side to side as much if the waves are hitting the side on. So I think that was the main reason. Occasionally we almost got a jump when a big wave hit and the boat was sort of jerked back on the anchor chain, but generally speaking there was no problem playing records.
So, for those who are too young to understand why you were off the coast in international waters on a boat with, I'm guessing, a massively strong output signal, I'm guessing, well, I'll explain what I know, then you can elaborate on it. Basically, if it was cool and hip, the BBC weren't doing it. And if you wanted, if you were a young person who was hip and wanted to find out what was new, and there was this little known group at the time who were up and coming called the Beatles, if you wanted to hear the Beatles, you had to, because the BBC wouldn't play it for more than, I'm guessing, what, a couple of hours a week or something, you had to tune in to these pirate radios who could exist outside of the law because they were outside of, or in, I should say, international waters. Is that accurate?
That's correct. Yeah, they're in international waters. So technically speaking, we weren't breaking any law. The BBC, as you say, at that time, they had just a few hours a week confined to play the latest hits, including the Beatles, of course.
Yeah.
It was called then the Light Program. Now it's called, I think, Radio One or something. And a very stuffy sort of state-owned BBC radio broadcasting them. You get a really posh sort of, all the guys presenting, what we now call disc jockeys, were reading from scripts. It was all scripted. So you got these, posh BBC voices on the airwaves and just reading scripted stuff and playing one or two hits over an hour or so, once a week. The only other outlet to hear pop music was Radio Luxembourg, which is hundreds of miles away in the little landlocked European state. And you can only hear it at night because of the signal strength. So that was the only, and it used to fade a lot and come back on and fade again. So that and the BBC were the only outlets for all this incredible music, which is the Beatles-led pop music, thrilling the whole world for British teenagers, confined to a few hours each week on the BBC and a very bad signal from Radio Luxembourg.
Well, I've got a million more questions to ask you, Ian, but we have got to get to a break. So, everybody, I'm with Ian McRae, the guy who actually lived on the boat that rocked, to tell you about it on the other side of this, only here on TNT Radio.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Florida isn't as conservative as it would have you believe, and neither is Texas. And in both instances, it's the same root cause. Republicans doing the bidding of Democrats as part of the Uniparty. After his drunken disaster earlier in the week, Texas House Speaker Wade Fallon led the impeachment against State Attorney General Ken Paxton, primarily because he was the biggest thorn in Obama's side and is currently the biggest thorn in Joe Biden's side. Paxton has been fending off spurious charges regarding financial dealings, personal dealings, etc., for almost a decade. Voters have had three opportunities to choose someone else, and they have resoundingly brought Ken Paxton back each and every time. The Senate trial is not expected to be the same cockamamie, corrupt kangaroo court proceeding as occurred in the House on Friday, and Paxton is finally expected to be vindicated. But this entire episode is People's Exhibit number one as to why Texans need to start voting smarter when they pull that R lever. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Oh, hold on. Just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
It's time to switch on
today's news talk radio.
Very entertaining.
Yeah. TNT.
And welcome back. We're talking to Sydney radio legend, in fact, Australian radio legend, Ian McRae, about his days off the coast of the UK doing pirate radio in international waters. And that little intro that I edited together at the beginning of the program, I had to edit out the bits that made an ad for the movie. But I just want to play this little part, this little snippet of it.
We're going to shut them down.
They can't close us down.
They will find a way. Governments loathe people being free.
Oh, ain't that the truth? Doesn't that remind you of what we're doing right here, right now? It's like history repeating itself. It was about censorship, but Ian, were they doing that in the US and Australia at the time or only in England?
What, pirate radio?
Yeah, well, was there a need to do pirate radio anywhere other than England?
No, that's right. There wasn't, because here in Oz and also, and of course, in the USA, they had legalized land-based commercial radio from starting way back in the late 1920s.
So, and they were already
that was the only place that, you know, it was the service was needed.
And okay, so the government now. Again, I don't know how much the movie exaggerated. Obviously, the government wanted to shut it down. First question, how many kilometres offshore did you have to be off the coast of the UK in order to be in international waters? How far was it?
Gee, I've got to think about that because it was either 8 or 10.
So it wasn't that far.
A lot of things about that. If they say if you... you were in the 60s and you remember anything, you weren't there.
Yeah, true that. That is true. So the other question is, how much time did you spend on the ships? Were you there like only for the shift and they'd fly you off or get you off on a boat and go back to land, or were you on there for the week?
No, 2 weeks on, 1 week off. And we had a little boat come out every day, bringing out supplies, obviously records, food, water, diesel oil, all the things we needed to stay on the air. So that was a daily occurrence. But we were on the boat for 2 weeks, and then you get 1 week to come ashore and get your 3 weeks' pay, which was great.
And without elaborating, was it like being at the YMCA, or did you have some female radio jocks there as well?
There were some female jocks, but not when I was on either station. But there had been some, yeah, and there'd been no problem with that, so that was all good.
No, I was just thinking, if I was a young 20-something-year-old DJ at the time, I would have thought that was absolutely terrific. But that probably talks more of me than anything else. Mate, so how many years did that happen, and at which point did they eventually give up and say, enough's enough, we're going to let radio, terrestrial radio on land in the UK, play the type of stuff that people want to hear?
Well, considering the effect that the pirates had, I think it's 40, 45 million people were listening. In fact, at one stage, there were more people listening to the pirates than there were to the entire BBC complex of stations.
Wow.
So considering that, what was the question again?
But basically, when did it end? When did they hand the keys to the kingdom back?
Yeah. Well, surprisingly, considering the success of the stations, the whole thing only lasted about 5 years, almost, from day one. And the government managed to sneakily find a way to close us all down. And what they did, they passed a bill in the House of Reps or somewhere in Parliament I can't remember what it's called now. Anyway, the Something Offences Act, Broadcast Offences Act, I think it was called. And in this bill, it made it illegal to work for an offshore station. And if you did, you got not just illegal to work for one, but to supply one with all the supplies I just mentioned that came out on the tender every day, to supply one, to advertise on one, or in any way to be involved in one, work for one, obviously. And they could put you in jail for a couple of years and fine you a lot of money. So that really forced all the stations except one, Radio Caroline, to go off air. Caroline hung in there, upped anchor and went across and anchored off Holland. And that lasted a while, a year or so, I think. I wasn't there. I'd come home by then. And then that eventually had to close because of financial reasons, I think.
So when you came back to Australia I'll jump back. So were you guys the DJs on the boats that rocked, if you will? Were you guys basically, you would have been big stars over in the UK because everyone was listening, yeah?
Oh, yeah. They used to have big rallies in Trafalgar Square to protest the government's actions in threatening to close the stations down. And when the stations were closed down, when we all came ashore for the last time, there was a huge riot almost at the railway station in Victoria. I think it was in London when we came into town. Thousands of people came to visit us and say hello and, you know, just say goodbye, basically. It was huge.
You know, I especially wanted to talk about this today because for those thinking that government censorship and them stopping us from speaking is something new, is something recent, this proves it's been around for a long, long time.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, indeed. Anyway, we forced the government eventually to license commercial radio, which is going quite well there now, a lot of stations. But at that time, all the people had to listen to when they wanted to hear rock and roll or whatever was the BBC. They started Radio 1. And a lot of the jocks on that station were from pirate radio. So they got rid of all this scripted stuff. And they were more like real human beings presenting the music. But then, of course, about two years after that, the government gave in, the pressure was too much, and they licensed all these commercial stations across the UK.
It's when you came back to Australia and your resume would have read pirate radio superstar off the coast of the UK. Was that helpful or a hindrance when you got back here?
I never used the word superstar, let me tell you.
But, oh, sorry. that's my word. That's my word. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. No, yeah, it took a while to get a job. The problem was when I went to England to work there, I had a problem initially with an Australian accent. They said, no one will know what you're talking about, because Australian accents in those days weren't the in thing. And eventually I got that job on Radio City. But when I came back to Australia, they said, oh, you sound too pommy. So you're too English, you know. So I had to sort of readjust my accent again. To get a job. But then I finished up in Perth for about 6 months at 6PR in Perth. And then this situation came up in Sydney, where a station which was mostly middle of the road music and a bit of talk overnight went top 40. I saw the future of radio, especially now they had people had transistor radios. And so I came back to Sydney. And been there ever since, basically.
How many expat English people did you get, or people from anywhere? I would guess Scotland, Ireland, Wales, possibly even France, did you get as they migrated? And there were plenty of them, including my dad, that migrated here during the 60s, who rocked up, tuned in during the 70s to 2SM, to the most popular breakfast program in Australia, hearing your voice and said, I recognise that guy from the pirate radio days. Did you get that often?
Well, I'm still getting it, really, which is really weird because I've been working, I'm doing sort of casual work for the Australian Traffic Network. We provide all the traffic reports for radio and TV stations. And I'm the guy they bring in these days when someone's away sick or on holiday. But whenever I do, especially the ABC, which is like the BBC of Australia, for those who don't know, when I'm doing crosses on the ABC, they always get calls. The producers tell me that they get lots of calls saying, is that the same Ian McRae that was on 2SM and I used to listen to in the UK?
Yep, I used to hear all the time. It is. I used to be driving around Sydney and I'd hear you doing different things, traffic and whatnot, and people would just ring in huge numbers getting excited. And I'm thinking, why don't those bastards give him a job? We all want to hear him back. And that was the case. I know a bunch of those guys were getting that because I've heard it from behind the scenes, as one would imagine. But I've got Chris on the live chat. He's a wealth of information. He's got here BBC Radio 1. The first song ever played in 1967 was Flowers in the Rain by The Move from, and that's from my hometown in Birmingham, Roy Wood's band, which split to form ELO. They formed ELO, and I'm guessing Wizard as well. Yep. He's got a good memory.
Yeah, that's all true. Yeah. I mean, they were those times in the 60s, from the early 60s to the end of the 60s, were really a golden period of such international success for not just the music, but the fashion. You got Carnaby Street and the media too. and, you know, all those great groups who still get played on oldies radio, the Beatles, obviously, Rolling Stones, The Who. Then, of course, there are big movies with stars like Michael Caine who came along. There's Mary Quant in the fashion and Gene Shrimpton, Tom Jones. So it's just all these names. It was really, it was the old world died and the new one came to birth at that time.
Ian, you're getting me all nostalgic. You've said Tom Jones. He's the best in the world. You make me want to sing Delilah with you on the radio. We should do that. I want to. I really do. Mate, we're running out of time, but of course you are a regular part of my program. A couple of times a week we chat here. Always something fresh to talk about. And again, I'd just like to thank you from the bottom of my heart and from everyone listening for coming on the program on a regular basis.
Okay. We should sometime talk about very quickly being held at gunpoint for a week when this boarding party took over the station, but that's for another time.
Wow, we'll do that next week. Thank you, Ian McRae. Thank you to all of you listening. We very much appreciate you. Thank God it's Friday. Don't you love it? The wonderful Katie Hopkins. She's wonderful. I love her. I'll be listening to her as I jot off to my next job. And good morning, UK. Good afternoon. Good evening to us in Australia. Back Monday.